There have been many multi-instrumentalists in jazz, but none like Rahsaan Roland Kirk. He became blind as a result of poor medical treatment when he was two, but he taught himself to play tenor saxophone, flute, and other horns, and even several instruments simultaneously. Adam Kahn's new documentary, The Case of the Three-Sided Dream, takes a look at Kirk's unique life and career. It will be screened as part of the Rooftop Film Series Saturday at 8:45 p.m. at Brookfield Place in downtown Manhattan. And I'm very pleased that it brings Adam Kahn to our show today. Hello.
Hi, Leonard. Thanks for having me.
Do you remember the first time you heard Rahsaan's music?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I was searching for records at a garage sale, and just randomly I took a chance, picked up a record. I knew nothing about him, and it was kind of love at first listen.
But that doesn't mean that you necessarily wanted to know more about his life. When did that happen?
Yeah, I didn't, you know, I made the documentary several years later, but little by little I started reading the liner notes, and as you know, his life is so interesting, and the more I read, the more interested I became.
And you found a fair amount of footage of him performing. Was he filmed a lot during his lifetime?
He was. And, you know, when I started the documentary, it actually started in 1999, so it's been quite a while. I started it, and then it paused, and then I kind of picked it back up 3 years late, 3 years ago to finish it. But when I started, you know, the internet was kind of in its infancy, and it was hard to find footage. Since then, so much more has come to the surface. But he was filmed a lot, and there's some really beautiful footage of him.
Can you describe what he looked like while he was performing?
Yeah, I mean, it's ironic, so many things with Rahsaan, because he was, as you know, he was blind, sightless, he would prefer to say. But so sonically, you know.
But he had all sorts of things about words. He didn't like the word jazz either.
Yeah. He certainly did not. But, you know, he would also put on a show, and visually consciously, he was an entertainer as well as a great musician, and he liked to put on a show, and visually he was a real eyeful. I mean, he would have three horns around his neck and bells and whistles, and he made up instruments. He would tape together, you know, pieces of hose to a flute. Just he had an arsenal of really unconventional instruments.
And around his neck would be a tenor, a manzello, and a stritch.
Right.
The manzello and the stritch are saxophones that not too many people play, but he had them because he could play all three at the same time?
Yes, yeah. He developed that. You know, the title of the film, The Case of the Three-Sided Dream, refers to a lot of things that came to Rahsaan in dreams, and one of them was a vision that he saw himself playing three saxophones simultaneously, and then he just went out and did that.
Didn't the name Rahsaan also come to him in
absolutely,
a dream?
Absolutely. You know, he would be asked, and a lot of journalists or some would ask him, you know, is it a religious, is it a Muslim, you know, what's your religion? And he would say, I'm from the religion of dreams. And the name Rahsaan came to him in a dream where he would say God came to him in a dream and told him to change his name to Rahsaan.
Also told him to change his name from Ronald to Roland.
Right, exactly. He went through multiple name changes. And as one of his friends points out in the documentary, you know, it wasn't a marketing thing, or he wasn't wondering how it would impact record sales or anything. He, you know, saw it in a dream and he did it.
He wasn't shy about his beliefs. There isn't much of it in the film, but he got rather political. I remember he used to give big speeches about Richard Nixon
politics
in general.
Yeah, I mean, well, there is the one. He did start a bona fide, if I can say, a political movement called the Jazz and People's Movement. Then they were very instrumental in getting more jazz on television in the late 60s, early 70s.
And that led to one of the most amazing performances ever in the history of the Ed Sullivan Show.
Absolutely.
And a highlight of your film. It's I don't remember that, but I wish I had seen it originally because it's just an extraordinary time. They want him to play
My Sharia Moore. Yeah. It's a great clip, and speaking about the internet, that's one you won't find on the internet, I don't think. But Yeah, he, you know, he started a political movement where they would do these grassroots disruptions of live tapings of shows, and they would smuggle in instruments. They would buy tickets to a show like Merv Griffin or Dick Cavett. They would smuggle in instruments, him and about 15 or so musicians, and when the show tried to tape, they would make noise and the show would be stopped. So that led to a dialogue, you know, why are these guys here? What do they want? And ultimately got him more exposure on TV, and it got him to the Ed Sullivan Show, which was... they had a kind of deal as to what they wanted Rasan to play, and he said okay, and they wanted a soulful. He did a lot of nice, accessible soul jazz stuff like Stevie Wonder and Motown recordings, but when he got on stage, he followed another agenda.
He brought on some pretty famous musicians with him. Roy Haynes on drums, mm-hmm. and Charlie Mingus, who he'd played with in the Mingus group, and sure. they performed a Mingus... yes. composition, Haitian fight song.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it was a great performance. What was the reaction? Ed Sullivan looks overwhelmed and really looks pleased. Was he pleased?
I don't know. Does he look pleased? I think he looks like he doesn't know
he
what
said, that was
to
fantastic.
Make of it. You know, a lot of the guys I talked to who were in that performance in there, they more talk about before the show how Rasan was really getting riled up and saying, we're going to burn it down, we're going to burn it down. And, you know, I think they did... hypothetically speaking, but the beautiful thing about that performance is that Rasan was also an educator and historian about music, and the handpicked band he had an impressionist on saxophone, Archie Shepp. He had Roy Haynes, played with, you know, Charlie Parker, bebop legend, played with Charlie
Parker. Still playing and in his 80s.
Yeah, and then he had, you know, Mingus, who compositionally is kind of the inheritor of Duke Ellington. So he had kind of like a varied group. And then he had his own journeyman guys, who he also, great musicians who he had on the stage too.
He could really play well, but most people will remember him as the man who played three instruments at the same time and then stuck a nose flute in mm-hmm. his nose and hit a fourth. Did right. a fourth instrument. And at the time, it was often dismissed as a gimmick. How did he respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, definitely a blessing and a curse. You know, he was into exploration and trying things and using everything he could find to make music, to get his musical message across. So, you know, he was certainly hurt and angry about the kind of dismissal of him as a gimmick, because on any one instrument, you know, he could have been a tenor virtuoso just on the tenor saxophone. But... you know, another thing one of the guys in the film points out, or pointed out to me, I don't recall if it's in the film, but he said, yes, he was dismissed as a gimmick and some critics misunderstood him, but it should also be, you know, we should say that jazz critics really also got him. He was revered. He won downbeat musician polls all the time.
And he was admired by a number of rock musicians, including Eric Burdon, who wrote a song about him. Jimi Hendrix said he wanted to record with him.
Well, they had a mythical jam session together when Rasan was in London. And, you know, a couple guys say this happened, that Hendrix showed up. And Hendrix is known to have, quote, say, you know, that Rasan was one of his favorite musicians. But they apparently jammed together once at Ronnie Scott's Club in London.
Adam Kahn is here. His film, The Case of the Three-Sided Dream, will be screened as part of the Rooftop Film Series on Saturday,
Saturday,
at 8:45 at the Brookfield Place in downtown Manhattan. Mm-hmm. What are the circumstances of that screening?
That's part of Rooftop Films, and they do a lot of open-air screenings throughout the summer. A great, great organization, and they're working with Brookfield Arts on that. And they just, you know, do these screenings of great films you might not be able to see elsewhere. Often there's music. In our case, there's going to be music beforehand from Akua Dixon, who was worked with Rasan at the end of his life. She's a cellist who has a quartet. And it's open air, it's free, and it's a good time.
How did he lose his sight?
He, you know, a couple of guys talk about it in the film. It was just negligence, wrongly administered eye medication from what I, you know, from the stories that are told. But,
in
you know,
Columbus,
this was 1937 in Columbus. And the consensus is, you know, a poor family, you know, poor African-American family, their kid gets blinded and there was no, you know, there certainly was a zero recourse for them. And he was just sent home and he had to live with it.
But he was a political activist, a jazz activist. He also was an activist for people with disabilities.
Absolutely, yeah. And he really, as we said earlier, he disliked the term blind. He preferred to call himself sightless. He actually said, you know, I'm a guy who doesn't see too well. But
he also didn't like it when people talk to his companion about him rather than looking directly at him when they talked.
Yeah, and his wife, Dorothan, talks about that. She said, you know, she would tell me it was always, quote-unquote, World War III when they went to a restaurant because the server would inevitably ask Dorothan, what does Rassan want? And he talks about it in the film. There's some really nice interview footage with him where he talks about treatment of himself and other people with disabilities.
It was very effective when he played those three instruments. He could play harmony with himself. But only one other musician that, as far as I remember, George Braithwaite, ever did it after him. Then he couldn't do it. He had a stroke.
Well,
he had a lot of physical problems.
He did. He did. And, you know, he had a lot of obstacles. And that's another theme in the film, all these obstacles he overcame. He had a stroke 2 years before he passed away. He became half paralyzed, but he continued to play. He only had the use of one hand. He retaught himself how to play. He had instruments altered. And as his son mentioned to me, you know, he was before the stroke playing three horns with two hands, but he went to playing two horns with one hand. So he still was able to do some multi-instrumental
stuff. He used his pinky as the equivalent of a hand.
Yeah. He basically, everything that was previously done on the right hand, he boiled it down to one pinky.
How old was he when he had the stroke?
He was 40 when he had the stroke, and he died at 42.
Very young. He had a heart attack?
I don't know how he died. I mean, Dorothan talks about him dying in the car when they're leaving a gig. He played literally till the day he died, but, you know, the actual...
She said he just slumped over.
That was it.
But, do you think he's better understood today than he was during his lifetime?
Not necessarily. You know, the thing I always like to mention is that he has a lot of crossover potential. So I think in a way there's contemporary musicians who are more hip to him, who like him and draw upon his influences. But, you know, he's a tough sell because he's uncategorizable. And, I mean, that's what's so beautiful about him, but it's hard to get his message across.
Talking about categories, why didn't he like the word jazz?
A few reasons, you know, and a lot of he's not the first not to like that term, but as you know, he coined a term black classical music. He felt what he was doing and other musicians was a black contribution, you know, before the term we use African American. And he also felt it needed the recognition that European classical music received, therefore black classical music. But I also know, you know, he just considered it all music. I mean, very much a continuum. And he drew upon influences, Bach, Dvorak, you know, Hendrix. It was all one continuum and it's all music really to him.
You also got some wonderful archival footage from another film by Dick Fontaine called Sound.
Wonderful film. Yeah. Great film. That was a short film he did with John Cage and Rassan. You obviously have seen it, but it's got just one of a kind footage with Rassan going to the zoo and playing call and response with wolves, and it's just a beautiful film.
In the film, you also talked to people who knew him, his mother, his wife, the musicians, especially one of the great trombone players of our time, Steve Turay. The film opens or will be shown this Saturday, free, you say, at Brookfield Place. And where is that located?
That's downtown. That used to be the World Financial Center. I believe it's Battery Park. But if you go to rooftopfilms.com, all the info is there.
And the film is called The Case of the Three-Sided Dream. My great thanks to Adam Kahn for being on our show today.
Thank you, Leonard.